that all the inhabitants of the glorious city of Gomorrah were watching him through narrowed eyes, recognizing him and winking at him. "What's all this, then? We met you just recently down on all fours without any trousers. Why don't you say hello?" He remembered. He puked. And he remembered something else, too. Someone following him, pursuing him, keeping up with him, sober, contemptuous, adult, while Artyom fled from his disgrace on sprawling hands and knees like a one-year-old child. And that man wanted something from Artyom. As clammy as a nightmare. But was it a nightmare? And then it occurred to him. There weren't many locals in Gomorrah, were there? All visitors. The fascists were visible, they were in uniform, the fools, but who else was here in civilian clothes? From Trubnaya you could get to Hunza too, and to the Red Line, and to the outlaw settlements at Kitaigorod, and from there to anywhere at all, and anyone at all could sail here, any ravenous vermin. Maybe he had gotten off lightly. If only he knew how he'd done it. By hit and miss, they extricated themselves from the tangle and arrived at the passage to Trubnaya station, Artyom with his bundles, Homer with the chicken. The old man had turned stubborn and refused to kill it and hand it over to the broker volunteer. As Olejek had prophesied, the chicken wasn't laying any more. Here there was a surprise. Passport control. How Trubnaya made its living, Artyom couldn't recall, but obviously not the same way as Tsvetnoy Boulevard did, if it was so choosy. Visas weren't required, but no one was let in without documents. Homer took out a green booklet with an eagle and a crown. Nikolai Ivanovich Nikolaev, born 1973, Arkhangelsk region, Sevastopol station, married, struck out. In the laminated photo he has no beard, he isn't grey, and he's not 40 yet. But recognizable. Recognizable. Artyom put down his load and started rifling through his pockets. It wasn't in his trousers. He turned cold. Not in the jacket, was it, eh? Not in the jacket that had disappeared along with the mushroom that was supposed to keep Artyom safe and keep his feet planted on the ground. He opened his bundle, suddenly covered in sticky gunk. His fear set the poison he had drunk yesterday flowing out of his pores, and rummaged, thrusting his hand in here and then there. Then he freaked out, tugged out the suit, flattened out his second skin on the floor in front of everyone, rifled through the pockets of the bundle, stuck the automatic under himself, tipped out everything at last, and glanced into all the corners. Not there. It's not there.
"Didn't leave it behind, did I?"
he asked Homer in a numb voice.
"Did it fall behind the table?"
Homer shrugged. No passport. He couldn't live in the metro without a passport. He couldn't get into Hunza, or police, or the Red Line. Not into Alexeyevskaya, and not into any other station where people at least tried to think about tomorrow. What he could do was starve to death at some barbaric way station, or be devoured in a tunnel. People gathered. They gaped with an equal mixture of suspicion and sympathy. Damn the gawkers. There was no time to hide. He had to know the truth. He reached into the knapsack in front of everyone, exposed the green side of the radio set. The border guards noticed it and frowned. He pulled it out, the radio and the dynamo. People started cackling. Not there. It's not there. Fuck it. Homer was farther off already. He gave a wave of his hand, sidled up to the border guards, and started trying to tempt them. But what was there to tempt them with? There were only 1.5 magazines of cartridges left at the most. God forbid that they should have to shoot.
"Refused," growled the lard bucket border post commander. "We'll let you through, and then the Reds will skin us alive. You won't get any farther than Sretensky Boulevard anyway."
"How come?"
"The Red Line cut us off yesterday. They entered Stretensky and they're checking everyone's documents. There's no way into the Red Line and no way out either. They've had some kind of a dust-up over there, but nobody knows what. So, they've entered Stretensky, and from Stretensky to us here. Better not to provoke them."
"They say the Reds are going to take Teatranaya."
"Who says?"
people say. So it doesn't go to the Reich. They're afraid the fascists will grab it first. They're getting ready. They'll cut off all the stations bordering on the Reich.
And when? Artyom froze, motionless over his savaged rucksack.
Whenever, go and ask them. They can do it any moment if the story's already leaked out.
We've got to... Artyom started angrily and nervously stuffing back the dynamo, the radio set, and all his damned junk. We've got to... Come here, Grandad. You go on alone through Sretensky. You've got a passport. You've got kind eyes and a beard like Father Christmas. You've got an idiotic chicken. They won't touch you. I'll go over the top, across the surface. We'll meet there, at Teatralnaya. If the Reds don't take it first, but if they do...
Homer watched, perplexed, as Artyom spoke. He nodded. What else was there left to do?
But if only I hadn't decided back then, for Olezhek, for the good of his health...
Artyom muttered, glancing in loathing at the chicken as he packed the final things into the bundle.
And it was all a fucking waste of time anyway. Goner, fuck it.
He mounted his rider on his shoulders and went back to the border guards, red-faced and heated, his condition actually seeming improved by his anger.
Where's their way up here? Where can I get up on top? What is there, a stairway, an escalator?
The border post commander shook his head almost regretfully.
A stalker, right? There isn't any way up here. It was demolished ages ago. Who needs to go wandering up there? Those floozies of theirs.
What about you? On Trubnaya, is there a way?
It's sealed off.
Just what kind of people are you?
Artyom bellowed in fury.
Haven't you got any use for the surface at all?
The border post commander didn't even bother to reply. He turned his well-fed backside towards Artyom. His trousers were splitting. To hell with you. Don't you come the wise guy with me. Artyom inflated his chest, tried to calm down. He ran and ran through the labyrinth, and the way out seemed to be just up ahead already, but suddenly all the corridors ended in dead ends, and behind him the little bridges he had bounded across had all gone crashing down into the abyss. Where could he go now? They'd cornered him.
Artyom!
The old man touched him.
What if we go through the Reich after all, eh? To Chekhov. Then we only have to get to Tverskaya. And there it is already, Teatralnaya. We can even reach it today, if everything goes smoothly. There's nowhere else you can go.
Artyom didn't say anything. He clammed up like an oyster, and just kept on and on rubbing his neck. His throat felt rough and scratchy.
Not too late, are we?
The Unteroffizier with the mole. He smiled genially.
We were expecting you.
Artyom hesitated, looking over the column. Should he tack himself onto the tail end of it now?
I... He lowered his voice. Don't have any documents. Do you take people into this legion of yours without documents? And I'll tell you right away, this is a stalker's gear plus a radio, so there won't be any questions afterwards.
We accept men without documents just fine, the Unter assured him. You get to rewrite your biography from scratch anyway. Who's bothered about who the heroes of the Reich were before?
Chapter 8 Heil. They left Tsvetnoy Boulevard on the last bottle raft, Homer and Artyom, Leocha, who was delighted that they'd met up again so soon, and the Unteroffizier with the mole, who told Artyom he was called Dietmar. Two other nameless men in black uniforms laid into the oars, and soon all that was left of Tsvetnoy Boulevard was a copper coin at the end of the tunnel. And then the coin drowned. There was a smell of mold. The oars splashed in the water, dispersing the rainbow-coloured film of petrol, scattering the floating garbage. Down below, under the scum and the rainbow film, vague, sinuous shadows moved about, and Artyom fancied he saw vile, restless creatures stirring, as thick as a man's arm. There hadn't been anything like them here before. There couldn't have been. The radiation had rolled and warped together some creatures of its own, grotesque and hideous.
Do you know who the Reds have in their advance guard?
The Unter said.
They take freaks into the advance guard. They put freaks into breakthrough units. They arm them, train them. Freaks with three arms, with two heads, with cancer, who have nothing to lose, and move them towards our borders, closer and closer. They know how those animals hate us. They recruit them throughout the whole metro. Our reconnaissance says they've set up a checkpoint at Tretenka and cut the line off from Trubnaya, and the commander of the checkpoint is completely covered in scales. You can't even tell anymore if the Reds are in command of the freaks, or the freaks are in command of the Reds. I think it's the second. That's why they want to finish us off. There's something in the works. In the works.
Artyom listened without hearing. He was thinking about something else. The most important thing was that no one there in the Reich must recognize him. No one must recognize the young boy who they had promised the ecstatic crowd at Pushkin would be hanged from the scaffold. The jailers from the cells at Tverskaya mustn't recognize him. A prisoner escaping from the gallows was a rare event. Would they forget something like that?
Hey, stalker.
Dietmar touched him on the arm and caught him through the sleeve directly on the burn.
What? What districts do you cover, I said. Where do you work? On the surface?
Me?
The library. Arbat. I used to bring books down for the Brahmins.
Homer looked past them, absent-mindedly scratching the chicken's shoulder. They didn't have time to give it to anyone in the den of vice, and they didn't have time to eat it. So the chicken was still alive.
A good district.
The Unter looked at Artyom. Fractured glimmers of light from torches clung to his face.
Do you know everything round there? Ochotny Riad? And farther up, towards the Bolshoi Theater?
I've been there,
Artyom said cautiously.
And why did you work for the Brahmins?
I like to read.
Good for you,
Dietmar exclaimed approvingly.
Good for you. The Reich needs men like you.
And men like me?
Leocha asked.
The Reich needs all sorts of men,
the Unter winked at him.
Especially now.
They arrived. The underground river ran up against a dam. The banks were heaped up with sacks of what was probably soil, and the bottle raft nudged against them. Behind the sacks was a genuine wall halfway up the tunnel. An electric pump was humming, bailing out the puddle that collected on the other side of the dam. Standards were hung around. Red field, white circle, three-legged swastika. The triumvirate of Chekhov, Tver, and Pushkin. Of course, they had all been renamed a long time ago. Chekhov was Wagner, Pushkin was Schiller, Tver was something else as well. The Reich had its own idols. They jumped out onto the bank, and the Unter exchanged Sieg Heil with the watch. They were all spruce, spick and span. They had discovered the Central Railroad office up on the surface. They didn't say so, but their uniforms were the same, black and silver. They examined the luggage, and of course, they found everything. There was the radio set. There was the automatic rifle. The Unter saved the situation. He whispered something, smiled to Artyom from behind a black shoulder, and the border guards relaxed. But they weren't allowed into the station itself. They found a side passage in the tunnel, blocked off with a grating, and with guards on duty.
First the medical inspection,
Dietmar announced cheerfully.
They don't take weaklings into the Iron Legion. You'll have to hand in your equipment and the chicken temporarily.
They left everything with the guards. A room, white tiles all around, a smell of carbolic. A couch, a doctor standing there in an antimicrobial mask, in a cap. Just his eyebrows drooping down. Some kind of doors farther on. The Unter went in with them, sat down on a stool in the corner. The doctor smiled with his salt-and-pepper eyebrows and gave them an oily glance from his olive eyes. He spoke in a sing-song voice, with an undefeated accent.
Right, who's first?
Well, why not me, then?
The broker squirmed.
And the rest are your underpants? Have you been through an army medical board?
The doctor looked, tapped, felt with rubber gloves, glanced into his throat, asked him to bare his teeth, put on a stethoscope and asked him to breathe.
And now we lower the underpants. Lower them, lower them. Right, if you don't mind. Aha! And what's this you have here?
What?
Leocha tensed up.
Why, here. The left testicle, I think. Don't you feel it?
Like that? Like that, of course I feel it.
Rather advanced already.
Neglected.
Well, but, doctor, I'm a good dancer.
The broker grinned.
So I'm okay. It doesn't bother me.
If it doesn't bother you, that's just fine. Get dressed, dear fellow. You're free to go. There, the door on the right.
Leocha pulled on his clothes and buttoned them, and meanwhile the doctor wrote something on a piece of paper. The Unter read it and nodded.
Welcome.
The broker winked at Homer and Artyom. Good health to you too, and ducked through the prescribed door. Some kind of steps ran downwards there.
Well then, now you, dear fellow.
That was to Homer. The old man stepped forward. He glanced back round at Artyom. Who knew what their medical boards were like here? Artyom didn't take his eyes off him, didn't abandon the old man. Suddenly he was overwhelmed by déjà vu and bewildered, as if he'd just woken up. He coughed from a sudden tickle in his throat. The doctor looked at him intently. Homer folded his greasy dressing gown into four and put it on the couch, on the edge at his feet. He pulled his sweater over his head. There was a dirty vest under it with stains under the arms. He stood up, naked, sunken-chested, pale-bellied, sparse clumps of curly hair on his shoulders.
Right. Let's take a look at the neck. The thyroid gland, and under the chin.
The doctor lowered his hands into Homer's sour silver.
Well now, no goiter. Now we'll feel out all the rest.
He kneaded tense, sullen Homer's belly, made the old man drop his underpants too, and checked him there as well.
I don't see any tumors at all. You take care of yourself, right? You don't go up on the surface by filtered water, yes?
The doctor said with respect, even surprise.
Congratulations, I myself wouldn't mind being in that kind of shape at your age. Get dressed.
He scribbled something on a piece of paper and stuck it in the old man's hand.
The left door.
Homer suddenly felt doubtful. He didn't hurry putting on his light coat, drew it out. Looked round searchingly at the Unter, the man in authority.
But why the left door for the old man?
Artyom asked for him.
Because, my dear fellow, your old man is perfectly all right,
the doctor replied.
Take a look at the note.
Normal, fit for service and immigration,
Homer read, gingerly holding the note farther off.
Fit for immigration. They're looking for tumors. And what if they find them?
And where does the door on the right lead to?
Dietmar, the one who had been asked, only smiled.
Ah, the young man has been sent for further examination. Things aren't completely clear there. The specialists have to take a look. Go on through, old man. Don't loiter. It's time for me to get on with your grandson.
The doctor explained rather impatiently, but not rudely. Homer reached out his hand timidly, still not detaching himself from Artyom. And Artyom cringed, thinking, what now? Will I be able to do it now? Can I stand up for the old man, the way I did back then? He could hear some kind of buzzing through the widening crack. Beyond the door on the left there was a stone passage painted green. The passage was crammed with volunteers, naked to the waist. A man in a uniform with a moustache was running a stuttering device over each of them one by one, removing their hair.
No cause for alarm, the Unter declared.
Homer breathed out his agitation. He walked in there to the normal men, shut himself in, and Artyom's tension eased a little.
Well, and now we'll deal with you, young man.
A stalker, I see.
Yes,
Artyom ran his hand over the back of his head, balding prematurely. Traitor.
You're taking a risk. Taking a risk, my dear fellow. Right, the cough is worrisome. I heard it. Let me see your back. You don't feel cold? Do you not have tuberculosis? Breathe. Deeper.
Do you think I'll get enough air? Artyom twisted his mouth into a smile.
No. There's nothing so terrible. A bit of wheezing. Now let's take a look for neoplasms.
He stuck his head out into the corridor.
Will you join us?
Both of the bruisers squeezed inside. What's this for?
Well, a stalker. The background radiation isn't falling, you know that. Quite often your colleagues, even before they reach 40... Now, don't you worry. Don't be so anxious. Boys, hold him. It's fine. Lie back, like that. A stalker. The neck, right? The throat.
The neck. Some get cancer of the thyroid, the most common from radiation. Sometimes first they grow a goiter on the neck, but sometimes a man burns out in a month, even without a goiter, and others potter to an old age with a goiter somehow. And what if he feels something now? If he says, 6 months left? The doctor's right. That sort of thing happens only too often with stalkers.
What kind of further examination is it in there? X-ray?
No, that's pushing things a bit too far, an X-ray. Right. Hang on. No, I imagined it. Over on your side? Uh-huh. So far, everything's okay with you. Let me have your stomach. Don't tense it up. No need.
The rubber fingers, soft and cold, somehow suddenly reached past the skin and the muscles to touch the liver itself and tickle the frightened intestines.
Well, I don't feel anything directly. Let's inspect the sexual organs. How are you still using them?
More often than you use yours.
Well, you're a stalker, that's why I ask. You chose a fine trade, of course. All right, I don't see any particular abnormalities here. Get up. You should stay in the metro, dear fellow, like all the other people, but you just have to go and do it. And next time, maybe we'll have to send you for further examination, too.
And how long will they take to examine him, that man? Artyom couldn't help listening. What was going on there behind that door on the right? Not a sound. And what was going on inside him, Artyom? Did it matter to him now if the broker was being X-rayed or not being X-rayed? Not a sound there either. The important thing now was to grab Homer by the scruff of the neck and drag him out of this place alive, and get to Teatralnaya, before the Reds arrived there. Only one stretch of line, one step to the goal. And Liocha. He wanted to fight the freaks. First, let him prove all about himself. Idiot.
How long as it requires, that's how long they'll take?
The doctor said pensively, writing out an authorization for Artyom.
In this matter, dear fellow, nothing is ever known in advance.
Dietmar gazed around proudly.
Well now, welcome. Darwin Station, the former Tver. Were you ever here before?
No, never. Artyom had a scratchy tickle in his throat again.
That's a pity. The station's changed beyond recognition.
And it was true. Artyom couldn't recognize Tver Station. 2 years ago, the low archways were completely covered off with metal grills, converted into cells. Squatting in those cells in their own shit were non-Russians who had been caught in neighboring stations. 2 years ago, Artyom had spent the night in one of those cells counting the minutes until his execution in the morning, trying to breathe and think his fill for the final time.
There's been a complete reconstruction.
The cells had disappeared. No soot on the ceiling from smoking torches. No rusty stains from human fluids that had leaked out onto the floor, everything scoured off, washed away, disinfected, and forgotten. And standing there instead of the dungeons were trading kiosks, neat and freshly painted with numbers, a holiday bazaar, a crowd splashing around in it, happy, peaceful, indolent, strolling around in families, little kids sitting on their father's shoulders, dangling their legs, choosing something from the counters, music playing. He felt an urge to rub his eyes. He looked for the spot where they had tried to hang him. He couldn't find it.
"You won't recognize the entire Reich," said the Unter. "After the general line of the party was changed, the reforms began. We're becoming a modern state, without any excesses."
Black uniforms were only a drop in the crowd. They didn't offend the eye. The hand-daubed posters about the superiority of the white race had vanished. The long banners, the metro for Russians, had disappeared, and of all the old slogans only one remained: a healthy mind in a healthy body. And so it was. There were all sorts of different faces on all sides, not just with snub noses, milky white skin and freckles. And most importantly of all, the people were all trim and erect, neat and tidy, like a Chekhov Wagner where they had been to first. He couldn't hear the wrenching cough that was a permanent fixture at exhibition. There was no one with goiter from radiation exposure, and all the kids looked hand-picked, two arms, two legs, cheeks like tomatoes from Sebastopol. "Just like your polar dawns," said Artyom, turning to Homer. The old man was shuffling his feet behind Artyom, twisting his beard and soaking it all in. For that book of his, what else? The chicken was dangling under his arm, the notepad screwed up, was jutting out of his back pocket. The Unter had refused to give back anything else yet, including Artyom's equipment.
"Over there, round the corner in the old offices, we have a hospital. Free, of course, and the entire population is given a medical examination twice a year, the children every 3 months. Will you go and take a look?"
"No, thank you," said Artyom. "I've just come from the doctor."
"I understand. All right, then let's... You know what? This over here."
Loading cranes jutted up along the edge of the tracks. Trolleys had accumulated there. They went over to admire them.
"Darwin is our main trading gateway now," Dietmar declared proudly. "The volume of trade with Hansa is especially large, and it's growing all the time. I think that in these difficult, turbulent times, all the civilized forces should close ranks."
Artyom nodded. What did Dietmar want from him? Why had he spared him the shaving of his head and formation training that the other volunteers had been herded off to? Why had he given way when Artyom demanded to keep Homer with him? Why would a common volunteer be honored by being led on an excursion round the stations, first round Chekhov, and now here too, in these difficult, turbulent...
"Over there is the tunnel to Teatralnaya.
Drop everything and make a dash for it.
The most unsettled section of the border. We're reinforcing our defenses, preparing, so that not even a mouse can creep through. So I'm sorry, but we won't go that way now."
So now what? How could they get to Teatralnaya? Ryava clucked and started flapping her wings. Homer had obviously squeezed her too tight, almost smothered her. But she didn't go anywhere. The old man was holding her tight. Artyom felt like a chicken himself. What could he do now?
"And over at the end, take a look. A tallow candle workshop, one of only a few in the metro, strangely enough. And sitting over there is our team of weavers, a genuine shock brigade. Absolutely magical socks. Anyone with rheumatism pays any price at all for them. Right. What else? Let's go down into the passage. That's where our accommodation sector is."
Leading down to the passage, the Pushkin Schiller, were two escalators that dived straight into the marble floor of the hall. The group scampered down the ribbed black steps and emerged into a genuine avenue. The passage had been lined on both sides with little cabin houses, bronze torch lamps burning between them, caressing the marble. In one of the gingerbread houses there was even a school, and at the break, with the jangling bell, well-washed, sound and healthy children came spilling out from inside towards Artyom, running straight into his chest.
"Shall we go in?"
They roused the teacher, Ilya Stepanovich, from the journal that he was pondering over, and he showed them the classroom. A pencil portrait of the Führer, a severe-looking man with a youthful air and stubbly cheeks. A map of the Reich, caricatures of the Reds, appeals to do morning exercises.
Artyom is a fellow thinker, joining the Iron Legion as a volunteer.
Dietmar presented him.
And this is... Homer.
What a curious name.
Scrawny Ilya Stepanovich removed his spectacles and rubbed the bridge of his nose.
Are you Russian?
Ilya Stepanovich, Dietmar drawled reproachfully. Is that really important now?
It's a pseudonym, said Homer. Dietmar is probably Dmitri, too, isn't he?
I used to be, the Unter chuckled. So how did you become Homer?
It's just people's mockery. I was trying to write books, a history of our time.
You don't say.
Ilya Stepanovich tugged on his beard.
Would you do me the favor of coming to visit for tea? That would be really interesting, and my wife can give you some dinner, if you're feeling hungry.
We'll come, we'll come. Dietmar was delighted. And how strong will the tea be?
As strong as our love for the motherland.
Ilya Stepanovich smiled with his yellow horse's teeth.
We're right at the end of the passage, opposite the gypsy family.
Social housing.
Dietmar raised his finger towards the molded ceiling.
Thanks to the Führer's concern.
The accommodation sector really was like something through the looking glass. The floor was covered with cozy little rugs stretching the entire infinite length of the corridor. The walls were hung with reproductions of all sorts of solemn old works and calendars with cats and flowers. Along the way they came across women in aprons and men in braces on their bare bodies. A draught wafted out wisps of mushroom stew steam from someone's kitchen, and suddenly, screwing up his eyes and laughing, a little toddler on a tricycle trundled out from behind some bend and went hurtling along the avenue.
It turns out that there is life on Mars, Artyom remarked.
You see? And they demonize us.
The Unter smiled at Artyom over his shoulder. The passage to Schiller ran into a brick dead end. Dietmar explained that the station was under reconstruction, so there was no way they could visit it today. They wandered around a bit more where possible, counting off every lingering second as they wandered. And the Unter didn't drop back for a single one of those seconds. He never left them alone together. They had to guess in silence. And at the arranged time, they knocked at their host's door. On the doorstep, they were met by a dark-haired, brown-eyed young woman with a huge, round stomach.
Nerina,
she introduced herself. Dietmar pulled out of his sleeve a champagne bottle, refilled with some kind of enigma which he had bought at some moment unknown, and gallantly presented it to their hostess.
A pity you won't be able to try it, he winked at her. I'm willing to bet that it's a boy in there. My mother had the way of telling, if the stomach is round, it will be a boy, but if it's a girl, it's pear-shaped.
It would be good if it's a boy,
she gave a pale smile.
A provider.
A defender! Ha ha!
Dietmar laughed.
Come on in. Ilya will be here in a moment. There, if you want to wash your hands. The toilet.
And they really did have their own tiny little toilet, separate, like in the abandoned buildings on the surface. A human toilet bowl instead of a hole in the floor, and a china wash basin on a leg, and a bolt on the wooden door. On one wall there was even a thick rug.
Splendid,
said Dietmar.
There's a very cold draught from there,
their hostess explained in a quiet voice as she handed him a waffle towel.
We insulate ourselves as well as we can.
It was decided to lock Homer's chicken in the toilet. They even sprinkled some crumbs for her. Their host came back from work, darting avid and curious looks at Homer. He invited them into a charming little room, sat them on a folding sofa, rubbing his hands, and poured them all clean little spirit glasses of his special tea with a secret.
Well, how do you like it here in the Reich?
It's remarkable,
Homer admitted.
And people in the greater metro still frighten their children with us, eh?
Ilya Stepanovich wrinkled up his face funnily and tossed back a little glass.
We've seen such great changes here, after the Führer's New Year speech in particular.
He turned towards a pencil portrait, exactly the same as the one in the school classroom.
It's all right. Let them come and take a look for themselves. Not even Hansa has a system of social security for its citizens like the Reichs. And, by the way, the program for accepting immigrants is being expanded here. They're reconstructing Schiller now.
Is that for the Iron Legion?
And for that, too. By the way, you can't even imagine how many volunteers are arriving from all over the metro. Many with families. We have 2 new children in the class just this month alone. I have to admit, the rejection of nationalism was an idea of absolute genius and such boldness. Can you imagine what boldness is required to admit in public at the party congress that the political course of all the preceding years, not just years but an entire century, was mistaken? What courage to declare something like that to the faces of all the delegates. Do you think the party consists of spineless puppets? No. Allow me to assure you that it has an opposition, and quite a serious one. Some have been in the party for even longer than the Führer himself. And then to throw out a challenge like that to those authority figures, I don't know about you, but I'd like to drink to him.
To the Führer!
Dietmar rose smartly to his feet. Even Nerina touched a glass to her lips. It was awkward not to drink, and Artyom and Homer drank.
Why pretend about it? Nerina and I? It was the Führer who gave us a chance.
Ilya Stepanovich touched his wife's hand tenderly.
By permitting mixed marriages. And not just a chance. This apartment. Nerina used to live at the Pavlets radio line station. It's a different world, a completely different world.
I've been there, Artyom muttered, replying awkwardly to his ardent gaze.
The hermetic doors are broken there, right? All sorts of garbage used to creep in from the surface, I remember. And there were a lot of sick people because of the radiation.
We never had any sick people,
little Nerina said harshly with surprising malice.
You're talking nonsense.
Artyom was taken aback. He shut up.
And so history is changing before our very eyes,
Ilya Stepanovich exclaimed in a voice resounding with joy, stroking his wife's hand soothingly.
And you're damned right to decide to write precisely now. You know, I myself, well, after all, I teach my pupils the story of the Reich from Hitler's Germany down to our days. And the idea keeps niggling at me that I should start writing a textbook. Why not write about all of our metro? And now here's the competition.
He laughed.
Shall we drink, colleague? To all those fools who ask why do we need to write a history textbook, for all those fools who mock us and whose children will find out how everything was from our books?
Homer blinked, but he agreed to drink. But Artyom kept glancing surreptitiously at Nerina. She wasn't eating. She wasn't listening to the conversation. Her arms were embracing and protecting the large, round stomach in which a little boy compounded of 2 bloods was sitting.
Really? Why shouldn't you write it, Ilya Stepanovich?
Dietmar exclaimed, infected by the teacher's enthusiasm.
Would you like me to have a word with my superiors? After all, we have a printing press, don't we? We publish the army's Iron Fist, so why not a book?
Are you serious?
The teacher blushed bright red.
Of course. Educating the children is a supremely important task. Supremely important. And it's very important what is presented to them and how, right?
Fundamentally so. Fundamentally important.
For instance, take our confrontation with the Reds. You know, their propaganda accuses us of all the deadly sins. You've had a chance to see for yourself now.
Dietmar turned towards Homer.
But you know, there are quite a lot of people who believe it. They believe it, and they're afraid even to stick their noses in here.
But just imagine,
Ilya Stepanovich continued.
Just imagine setting out to write about the Reich without ever having been here. What could you have told posterity about us? Some terrible poppycock? Nothing but stupid nonsense.
And what will you tell them?
Homer couldn't resist asking.
The truth, naturally.
But surely everyone has their own truth, don't they?
The old man inquired.
Even the Reds, probably, if so many people believe it.
For the Reds, truth is advantageously displaced by propaganda,
Dietmar intervened.
This egalitarian leveling down. I tell you, the freaks have secretly seized power there, and they're brainwashing the normal people. They incite them and stir them up against us. They're preparing for war. Where's the truth in that?
Hungry, poor people. Just how hard do you think it is to make them believe anything at all? Do you think they'll even try to distinguish the truth from the lies to separate the wheat from the chaff?
Ilya Stepanovich put in.
They can't admit that here in the Reich a social model has been created that has no equal in the entire metro, can they? No. They'll try to scare you with concentration camps and ovens and such rubbish.
Nerina put her hand over her mouth, as if afraid that some forbidden word or other would slip out, then stood up and walked out hastily. Ilya Stepanovich didn't even notice, but Artyom did.
And what will you write about the freaks in your textbook?
Homer asked.
What is there to write about them?
Well, if I understand correctly, aren't they now... they're the ones the Reich is fighting against now? Isn't that so? Instead of...
Yes, they're the ones,
Ilya Stepanovich confirmed.
But how? How is it fighting?
Remorselessly, Dietmar prompted.
But what do you do with them, the ones that you find?
What difference does that make? Well, they're sent off to perform corrective labor.
The teacher frowned.
You mean that deformities can be corrected by this labor? What about cancer?
What?
Cancer. From what I've heard, the Führer has equated cancer to genetic deformity. I wonder what sort of work that is.
Well, if you're so interested, Dietmar smiled, then we can show you. But what if your hand should get used to the pick? Then your fingers wouldn't be able to hold a pen.
Then you'll produce a really fine little textbook.
Did I just imagine it? Or do you sympathize with the freaks?
Ilya Stepanovich asked.
Are you going to present them as little blonde-haired angels in your book, then? The Führer has explained everything quite explicitly as far as they're concerned. If we let those animals multiply, the next generation of human beings will be unfit for life. Do you really want them to dilute our blood with theirs? Do you want your children to be born with two heads? Is that what you want?
Children with two heads can be born to anyone in this cursed metro of ours. Anyone!
Homer cried, jumping to his feet.
Poor, sick children! And your two-headed children here, what do you do with them?
Ilya Stepanovich didn't answer. Homer didn't say anything more either. He just breathed heavily. Artyom, who hadn't gotten involved in the conversation, suddenly realized that the old man had turned out to be braver than him. And he suddenly wanted to kill someone for this old man, in order to be as brave as he was.
Well, now, why don't we take a look at what our honorable historian writes in his book?
Dietmar leaned across the table, dipping his uniform jacket in the salad and deftly grabbed the notebook out of Homer's hands. Artyom jumped to his feet, but Dietmar lowered his hand onto his holster.
Sit down! Stop this! Said the old man.
Narina came running in. Her face was wrinkled up and her eyes were gleaming. It was too frightening to fight Dietmar in this little room. A stray bullet could hit anyone. Narina huddled against her husband in fright.
Everything's all right, my dear.
Ilya Stepanovich, give me your opinion.
Keeping one hand on his holster, Dietmar handed the notebook to the teacher.
Gladly,
the teacher said with a grin.
Right, let's say the beginning, then. Aha! They didn't come back on Tuesday, or on Wednesday, or on Thursday, which had been agreed as the final deadline. The handwriting, of course. The first guard post was standing duty. What's this? Ah, round the clock. Listen, don't you ever put any commas in anywhere? All right, so far it's some kind of literary essay. Let's try the middle. Boring, boring... Oh, Homer, the myth-maker, the painter of life.
was only just being born into the world, like a bright-colored butterfly. And can you believe it? Mythmaker is written with a hyphen. Myth-hyphen-maker. Ah, and that punctuation again. Ah, it's giving me cramp in my temples. So, is that how you write about yourself, colleague? Or this here?
Alone against a legion of killers, she said stubbornly. I want a miracle. Oh, ho, ho. Now that's real pathos.
But what of it? Streams started rustling. Aha, rustling. The walls breached. Someone howled. It's rain, she shouted. Ah, so she confuses a breach in the wall with rain. Romantic.
Homer seemed to have lost his tongue. Artyom kept his eyes fixed on the holster.
Well, then, let's try the end, although I think everything about your story is already clear. Softly, like a lullaby. What a hell of a mess. Aha! Homer didn't find Sasha's body. At Tula. And what else? The end. And about yourself in the third person again. Delightful, delightful. Here, take it.
The teacher slapped the notebook down on the wet oilcloth.
There's nothing seditious here. Nothing but pretentious nonsense.
Go fuck yourself,
said Homer, wiping the notebook on his trousers and stuffing it into his inside pocket.
Ah, save it. Learn to write about mistakes first, and then you can sculpt your Iliad. You probably called yourself Homer. Nobody else would have done that.
Fuck off,
Homer repeated stubbornly with a sullen scowl.
Why, half of the book is about you. What kind of damned history is that?
There is no room left for history.
It's an old one. The new one will be different.
Well, may the new one turn out better.
Dietmar suddenly let go of his holster and picked up a shot glass.
We've had a row and quarreled a bit, and now that's enough. Here's to your new book, eh, Ilya Stepanovich? We've been a bit rude with our guests. Please, do forgive us. Your beautiful wife here is getting upset. As it happens, I rather like the passages that Ilya Stepanovich read out, those little passages. I'm no specialist on commas myself, but apart from that, it's all smooth enough. Forgive us, Homer Ivanovich. We got so heated because it's a very sensitive subject. For everyone.
For everyone,
the teacher confirmed, placing his hand on his wife's stomach.
What you said about children with two heads, that was simply tactless. I think you understand that yourself, Homer Ivanovich. You do understand, don't you?
Dietmar asked in a stern tone of voice.
We were tactless ourselves, but so were you. Let's consider this incident closed, shall we?
Yes, all right.
Homer raked a shot glass off the table and drained it in one. Artyom followed his example.
Got any tobacco?
He asked across Dietmar.
Let's make it my treat.
Smoke in the toilet, please,
said Narina. Artyom offloaded the chicken, locked himself in the toilet, sat down on the genuine human toilet, rolled himself a cigarette with the enemy's tobacco, struck a match, set the glowworm against the roll-up and took a drag, quietly releasing the vicious demons from inside him. He wanted to cool off. He remembered about the wall that was warmed by the beauty of the carpet. He felt the nap with his hand. Was it even cool? Then what was it for? He slipped his fingers under it. There was just an ordinary wall. Not cold at all. So why lie about the carpet? Artyom finished off his roll-up in a hurry, drowned the butt in the water, and listened to see if anyone was getting killed in the room. Not so far. Dietmar was laughing, the merry fellow. He clambered up onto the toilet bowl, felt to find out how the carpet was held up on the wall, lifted it up with an effort and took it down. What did he think he would find there? A little door with a little lock that a little golden key would fit into. For the local Pinocchios, the country of magic began on this side of the carpet. But what was on the other side? There wasn't anything. It was a bare wall, bricks smeared with plaster. The carpet simply cheered things up a bit. Now he had to hang the incredibly heavy carpet back up, get the little loops onto the nails. He desperately didn't want to. Artyom pressed his forehead and his cheek against that rough wall anyway. It didn't help him to cool down. The roll-up had done more good. But something there. He was imagining things, wasn't he? He turned his head and pressed his ear against the abrasive plaster. Behind the wall, on the other side, someone was howling quietly. They were howling and yelling so quietly that he could hardly hear them, because it was a thick wall, but the yelling was still bestial and spine-chilling. They shut up for a second to draw air into their lungs, then started howling again. They wept, implored unintelligibly, and beseeched again. They broke off, choking, then screamed again, as if someone was being boiled in oil there. It was that kind of howling. Artyom tore himself away from the wall. What was behind it? Schiller Station. That was the passage to Schiller Station, wasn't it? And it was a dead end because Schiller was being reconstructed. They'd taken the dungeons out of Tver Station and transferred them to Pushkin. So much for all the reforms.
"Hey, Stalker,"
Dietmar's voice asked outside the door.
"I really had to go. I'm on my way."
Artyom strained and lifted the incredibly heavy carpet off the floor, just hoping that the toilet bowl wouldn't come unstuck. He just barely managed to guess where to hang it before the strength in his arms ran out. He climbed down carefully and quietly. The toilet was filled with impervious silence once more. Now it was possible to shit in peace again.
"Well, how do you like the apartment?"
Dietmar was loitering right outside. He must be desperate to go too.
"It's really fantastic.
I can tell you in secret that there's another one the same beside it, and it's still free."
Artyom stared at him.
"Social housing. They finished the renovations. They give us a quarter for the soldiers.
Would you like to live in one, eh?"
"It's my dream."
"Well now, we could reward the hero of the Legion, as an example to the others, for a feat of valor."
"What feat of valor?" Dietmar blew out smoke and grinned.
"Still angry because we tweaked your old man's nose for him, don't be. That was a little check, for adequacy of response. You handled it pretty well."
"What feat of valor?"
"A little apartment with a separate toilet, eh? Sounds good. And a military pension. You could quit all your excursions. The doctor told you, but you..."
"What do I have to do?" The Unteroffizier shook his ash onto the floor. He ran his glance over Artyom again. Coldly. His smile had passed off, and the black mole looked like a bullet hole in his dispassionate face.
"The Reds are going to try to take Teatralnaya Station. It's a neutral station, always has been, and that's a sore point with them. They have Ochotny Riad and Revolution Square, but no direct passage between them. They can only go back and forth via Teatralnaya. Our intelligence service says they've decided to connect them together. We can't allow that. Teatralnaya Station is only one stretch of line away from here. The next blow will be struck at the Reich. Are you listening?"
"Yes, I am."
"We have an operation all prepared to save Teatralnaya from them. We have to cut off the passages from Teatralnaya to Ochotny Riad, to the Red Line, so they won't be able to move their forces through them. There are three connecting passages. You'll get the upper one, via the vestibule. You'll go over the surface, along Tverskaya Street. You'll go into the vestibule and lay a mine there. You'll set up your radio and report, and wait for our signal."
Artyom breathed in a chestful of the other man's smoke.
"But why don't you send your own men? Don't you have any stalkers?"
"We've run out. 2 days ago a group of four soldiers went up there on the same mission and disappeared. There's no time to train anymore. We must take urgent action. The others might be spotted at Teatralnaya. The Reds could attack at any second."
"And the vestibule at Teatralnaya? Is it open, not caved in?"
"You don't know. It's your district, isn't it?"
"Yes."
"Will you do it?"
"If the old man goes with me. I need him."
"Oh, no.
The Unteroffizier smiled, and the bullet hole became a mole again.
I need him more. I need him because if you don't get in contact in time, or you don't blow up that fucking passage in time, or if you don't get back here in time, then for that I'll have to finalize someone's examination.
Artyom took a step towards him. Dietmar whistled, and the door immediately swung open with a crash. Suddenly there were three men in black uniforms in the room, automatic rifles at the ready, and they already knew where the holes would be in Artyom.
Agree, said the Unteroffizier. You'll do something great. Something truly good.
Unnecessary.
Chapter 9. Theater. He spat in the lenses of the gas mask and rubbed them with his finger so that they wouldn't steam up. Then he clicked the switch on the radio and turned it to the right frequency.
Come in. Contact in 1 hour. Everything must be installed already. This is the surface. I can't promise in 1 hour. If you don't get in touch in an hour's time, you've either run out on us or croaked. Either way, the old man's dead meat.
You haven't been able to contact your own men in 3 days, but you give me good luck.
Blank noise again. He sat there for another minute, listening to it, and turned the handle. In order not to hear what? Then he closed his knapsack, pulled on the straps cautiously, got to his feet and carried it away delicately, like an injured child. 10 kilos of explosive inside it. He pushed open the badly scratched transparent door and clambered out into a pedestrian passage. A row of trading kiosks with no end to it in sight. All the display windows smashed, filth everywhere. Everything covered in graffiti. He didn't switch on his torch. A torch could be seen from a long way away. He wondered where the 4 stalkers had been taken out. 4 of them, all armed, with a radio. And not one of them had managed to say a damn word on that radio. He walked forward along the wall, past the kiosks. Who knew what they used to trade in here? Books. And smartphones, probably. There were so many of those smartphones in the metro. All the flea markets were choked with them. They sold them by the kilogram, and they were almost all dead. People had bought them somewhere. They bought them to call their nearest and dearest. Put that tiny, flat box to your ear, and out comes your mother's voice. Artyom had once made Shukoy buy him one like that at Peace Prospect, when he was still little. He played with it for 6 months, calling his mother at night from under the blanket, until the batteries acidified. And then he made calls on the broken phone for another 3 years. But now if you wanted to talk, then lug this box of tricks around with you. If only you could get through to the next world. If it could just call the next world, eh? He walked up the steps, squinting. Twilight. Hello, Moscow. The world unfolded in a cross. A huge square with 10-story buildings like the walls of a canyon, burnt and charred. Tverskaya Street crammed with rusty cars that had crashed into each other, with their doors splayed out, as if they were trying to flutter those 4 doors like a dragonfly's wings, break free from the traffic jam and make their escape. Everything was gutted. Seats torn out, trunks broken open, and the boulevard ring ran across Tverskaya Street, a black thicket, naked, knotted roots reaching out along the ground towards each other from both sides, trying to close the circle, impatiently pushing aside the skeletons of the cars. Huge advertising hoardings on the buildings. Without old people's help, there was no way to tell what they were trying to sell. Watches, soft drinks, clothes. Those crooked Latin letters, each the height of a man, didn't mean anything. Artyom wouldn't even have realized that they were advertisements if his seniors hadn't explained that to him. Gibberish. The memories of the demented. Now the exposed roots and black branches, the wandering dogs, the tumbleweed and bones laid bare by looters could buy this gibberish. He took a closer look at the thickets. Was there anyone there? Better not go close. The city seemed dead, but someone here had gobbled up 4 fully equipped soldiers. It wasn't far to Teatranaya station, only a 15-minute walk. That's what they'd thought, too. If it hadn't happened to them here, by the boulevards, then it must have happened somewhere up ahead. Should he walk along the buildings, or down the middle? Moving straight along the road between the cars, he'd be too obvious. Walking along the pavement, he'd have to listen and watch all the time. The buildings might only look empty. Maybe everyone at exhibition knew Artyom, but here... He adjusted the hang of his automatic, took a grip on the stock and stepped out along the pavement, past the huge 2-story high shop windows. Everything out as far as the roadway was littered with fine debris, sprays of smashed glass and various dummies lying there, killed, some looking like human beings and some looking like dark ones made of shiny black plastic, but faceless, with no noses or mouths. All lying there together. No one got away. A ransacked jewelry shop, a ransacked clothes shop, a ransacked and burnt-out God-knows-what shop, and the same thing on the other side of the road, a fine street, Tverskaya. Good pickings. The people living in the local stations were lucky, but unfortunately, there weren't any food shops. The building stood close-packed in a solid wall, and the evening sky was settling down, laying the quilted jacket of its paunch straight onto them, making Tverskaya look like an immense tunnel, and the frozen metal torrent of the roadway looked like railway tracks to Artyom. In the jaws at the far end of this tunnel, the Museum of the Revolution flourished its towers like fangs, with the Kremlin's fangs on one side. The stars on them were extinguished. All their bewitching power had fizzled out, leaving only their vague black paper silhouettes against the dirty clouds. They made a dismal sight. After all, a walking corpse is more cheerful than the ordinary kind. And another thing. It was quiet. Absolutely quiet. The way it never was in the metro. What do you think, Jen? The city probably used to be noisy. It must have been noisy. All these cars growling away and sounding their horns at each other. And all those people clamoring away together because every one of them needed to say what he wanted to say more than all the others did. And the echoes from these buildings as well. Like from cliffs. But they've all shut up now. It turned out that none of it mattered. It's just a shame that not everyone got a chance to say goodbye. And they needn't have bothered to say all the rest of it at all. And then Artyom saw something ahead. On the pavement. Not a shop dummy. Dummies can't lie like that. They're always contorted by convulsions like tetanus. Their arms don't bend, their legs jut out, their backs are like rigid sticks. But this one had huddled up tight, like a little child, and died. Artyom looked round quickly. No one there. A black uniform protective suit, clutching an automatic rifle. His helmet knocked off, lying beside him. Staring into the asphalt, into the dried-up blood. A hole in the back of his head. On a closer look, his stomach had leaked a lot, too. The ribbon of blood ran across the ground. So they wounded him, then walked up and finished him as he crawled. And he was obviously in a really bad way, too busy trying not to die in order to crawl anymore. Totally focused on it. He didn't even glance back to look into the faces of the men who had shot him. And they weren't interested either. That was the first. So no one had eaten them. And they hadn't taken his automatic, they'd spurned it. That was strange. Artyom squatted down and tried to take it. But the dead man's hands had turned stiff. He'd have to break the fingers. Okay, so keep your rod. He just unclipped the magazine and found the spare. That even gave him a kind of lift. As if Dietmar had paid him in advance for the operation. Stalkers don't believe in pillage. What stalkers believe is this.
Taking a dead man's gear is like remembering him in your prayers. Lying there with his gear is depressing and pointless for him anyway. He feels better knowing it will serve a good man. Artyom felt like moving on quickly. Where did this martyr get shot from? Why hadn't his three comrades stopped, picked the wounded man up, and carried him into cover? They couldn't have finished him off themselves, could they? Then why had they abandoned the service automatic? Were they in a hurry? He'd have to ask them that. But he didn't get a chance. The second was lying about 300 meters farther on his back like a star. He had wanted to take one last look at the sky, only he probably didn't see anything. One lens of his gas mask was shot through and the other was flooded with something brownish on the inside. And there was a puddle under his back. The same thing then. First they brought him down, then walked up for the coup de grâce. His friends hadn't loitered here either. Artyom fancied he heard something in the distance. A gust of wind brought a droning sound, like a motor. He couldn't really tell. The air hummed too loudly in the filters. The gas mask rubber blocked his ears. Artyom quickly took the dead man's magazine, huddled close to the wall after all, and hurried on, gazing round. It was only 1/2 kilometer now to Ochotny Riad. Now he just had to avoid croaking anywhere himself. He didn't spot the third one immediately, and only with his peripheral vision. This one was cunning. He turned off the street and tried to hide in a restaurant. But how could he hide when all the walls were glass? They'd found him, and riddled him with bullets. Turned a man into a shapeless sack. They probably dragged him out from under a table and finished him. Now that was a sound. Definitely. A roaring motor. Artyom held his breath. No, it didn't help. Then he pulled off his gas mask. Who cared what might happen in a year's time? He turned one ear toward the wind so it wouldn't prevent him from hearing. There it was again. A hoarse roaring. Someone stepping on the gas somewhere far away behind the buildings. A vehicle. Operational. Who? Artyom took off like a bat out of hell. So that was how. That was why they ran, and why they couldn't get away. They were overtaken and finished off one by one, which gave the others a lead of 200 or 300 meters. But then they got the next one. But why hadn't they fired back? Why hadn't they taken up position in a shop window and tried to fight them off? Were they still hoping to reach Teatralnaya? He didn't want to jolt the knapsack at first, but the roaring suddenly sounded quite distinctly behind his back, from straight along the tunnel of the street. And Artyom started bounding along, not looking round or stopping. Move it, move it. If the jolting set off the blast, that wasn't as terrifying as if they winged him first and then came to finish him off. So let it go boom. And then the sound split in two. There were two motors, not one. One straight behind and the other apparently to one side. Apparently. One on one side of the street and one on the other. Were they corralling along? Who could it be? Who? Should he hide? Dodge into a building? Run and take cover in an apartment? No. On this side of the street there weren't any residential entrances. Nothing but shop-front fish tanks, burnt out and empty, with no exits. Just a bit farther to the turn. Then there's Ochotny Riad. Then skirt round the Duma, and he'd be there. The fourth stalker wasn't anywhere on Tverskaya Street, so he must have made it to the turn. That meant Artyom could make it too. He had to make it. He saw his own shadow in front of him, long and pale, and a strip of light. They'd switched their headlights on behind him. Or was it a searchlight? Someone pulled a length of barbed wire down through his throat into his lungs, pulled it down and jerked it backwards and forwards, using it like a bottle brush to clean out Artyom's bronchial tubes. He couldn't control the urge and looked back as he ran. It was an off-roader, a wide brute of an off-roader, tearing along the pavement.
The road was choked with rusty metal. There was no way through. Then there was a squeal of brakes and it stopped. Something was blocking its way. Artyom took a gulp of cold air and turned the corner. And immediately he heard the other engine off to one side, a hoarse mosquito buzzing. A motorcycle. Ponderous and substantial. The State Duma was like an immense headstone with its ground floor of gloomy granite and its stony grey upper sections. Who was buried under it? The motorcycle shot forward and hurtled along beside him. Without taking his eyes off the road, the rider flung out his left hand and fired a random glittering burst that chattered along the gravestone walls, ricocheting. Artyom was spared. And then without stopping or reducing speed, he also held out his bouncing automatic and blasted a burst somewhere in the general direction of the motorcyclist. A complete miss. But the rider stepped on the gas to avoid putting himself in the path of the blind bullets and shot off in order to swing round somewhere far away. The roaring started up again behind him. The off-roader had found a way through. But now Artyom only had a short distance left to cover to Teatranaya station and the entrance. Only 100 meters. Is the entrance open? Lord, Lord Jesus, is the entrance open? If you exist, it must be open. Do you exist? The final fourth soldier was lying right in front of the doors, not even lying, but sitting with his back slumped against the locked panels of wood. Sitting there, dejectedly, looking at his bullet-riddled stomach, at his hands, at the life that had flowed out through his fingers. Artyom darted up to the doors and tugged on one, then another and another. The hysterical motorcycle came back from its banking turn, getting louder and louder. Then the square off-roader drifted wide round the corner. Armor-plated, was it? Artyom had never seen any like that. No one in the metro could have any like that. None of the ragged-trousered subterranean empires had anything like that. He pressed his back against the doors and raised his automatic, trying to catch the narrow windscreen in the dancing sight. No point in even firing at something like that. A tiny figure appeared on the roof of the off-roader like a target in a shooting gallery or a jack-in-a-box. A sniper. A bullet zipped by, making a neat hole in the glass. That was it. The end. He was done for. He fired a wild burst. An entire bracket of floodlights lit up on the roof of the off-roader, lashing at his eyes and blinding him. Now he couldn't even take aim unless he fired up into the air. This was the end. It would all be over in a moment. Just as soon as the sniper caught Artyom in his little circle. Artyom screwed up his eyes. 1, 2, 3, 4. The motorcycle shot out to a convenient distance and spluttered into silence. Artyom tried to get a peep, shading his eyes with his hand.